This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This time for Africa. You're listening to the official music for World Cup 2010. It's by Shakira and titled This Time for Africa. And no matter what you think of FIFA's taste in music, there's no doubt that the real style is on the field.
That's good pressure. And here's Babel. And he scores with some power.
Pilota larga viene, gol!
A few calls from the last round of international friendly matches, and that announcer will probably still be yelling goal all the way to Friday when the 2010 World Cup kicks off in South Africa. He's still going. Well, excitement for the tournament is building here in Boston, and we'll hear a little more about that in a moment. But first, here with a preview of the games themselves is Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. Hey there, Bill.
Hey, Meghna.
And Kurt Nikisch, he's WBUR's business and technology reporter and our resident football freak. Hey there, Kurt.
Hiya.
So, Bill, tell us, USA Soccer, what do you think its chances are this year in the tournament?
Well, you know, I worry less about U.S. soccer's chances than about the tournament at large. There's so much to be delighted by. But the U.S. team is certainly one of those things. Clint Dempsey is at the top of his game, has done great things in the premiership over the last couple of years. Landon Donovan seems finally to have matured as a player, not the same guy who used to go to Germany and get homesick and come home. Mm-hmm. And they got this other guy that I met when I went down to see the game in Hartford named Hercules Gomez, who is one of the least Herculean players you'll ever see. He's 5'10 and weighs 165, but he just keeps scoring goals. And I'm not sure how they're going to keep him off the field.
Not a bad thing for American soccer. Kurt, what do you make of the fact that now more than ever, as Bill seems to be mentioning, we've got so many American soccer players that are playing internationally. They're at that level.
Well, Bill just mentioned Clint Dempsey. He used to play here for the New England Revolution. He now plays in England. And if you look at most of the players, Premier League in England, Hercules Gomez plays in Mexico, and there are some players from the U.S., from the MLS. And so when you actually look at the names like Gomez and Bocanegra and Dempsey and Donovan, you just get this sense that you have this team that's put together with a lot of different styles and a lot of different heritages.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, I know you also seem to like the man who's guarding the goal for the United States.
Well, you can't not like Tim Howard. Brilliant profile of him recently in The New Yorker. Just a fascinating character in many respects. And another guy who has, there's a bit of a pattern of U.S. soccer players succeeding magnificently as goalkeepers overseas, really much more than U.S. players succeeding as field players. And Howard is terrific. I mean, he's determined. He's athletic. He's marvelously durable over the years. I have every reason to think he'll have a great World Cup.
Kurt, let me ask you that obviously, you know, maybe we're rooting for USA soccer here, but it is the World Cup. There are a lot of other teams. So who else are you going to be keeping your eye on this time around?
Well, Spain is kind of considered the favorite because they're ranked number one in the world. They were European champions. They had this incredible win streak that only the U.S. broke last year, actually. They had something like 43 straight matches where they won. Germany, always a good tournament team. Italy is, of course, the defending champion, mm-hmm. but they're bringing back a lot of the same people that they had 4 years ago. Some worries that they're too old, that they're not going to be able to succeed. But then the big question is, how are the African teams going to do? I mean, African teams always kind of are really exciting, enthralling. They bring this great soccer, but they're sometimes not disciplined enough. They have sort of shabby goalkeeping, and they've never won, you know, the World Cup. It may be different now that it's on home soil.
Although I hear that in one of South Africa's latest international friendlies, they actually beat Denmark 1-0, which is a great win for them. And also one of the world's hottest players right now is Didier Drogba from Ivory Coast.
Yes, operating unhappily for him with only one arm these days. He broke his arm recently, and that seriously compromised their chances. But yes, he won the Golden Boot in the Premiership, scored more goals than Wayne Rooney, to the great dismay of fans of the English team. The only other team that I would add that'll be great fun to watch in this tournament is Argentina, because they have the best player in the world in Leo Messi, at least my opinion, is the best player in the world. And so there's a question of on one extreme, you could have Leo Messi scoring 11 goals and Argentina winning the World Cup. And on the other extreme, you could have Diego Maradona, their coach's head exploding in the first game, and they're not getting out of the first round. And I love the fact that either of those possibilities are real reality. They were one of the last teams to qualify for the World Cup, despite having an incredibly strong roster of players. So they'll be fascinating to watch.
I just couldn't imagine what Maradona would be thinking if the hand of God itself could not get Argentina past the first round. But Kurt, you were at the last World Cup,
right,
in Germany, and just the spectacle itself of the world's largest sporting tournament. What was that like, and what do you anticipate it might be like in South Africa?
It is crazy, and I can't wait to hear in a minute, you know, what it's like in South Africa right now, but I have never been anywhere where, you know, there's such passion universally held by so many people. I mean, I mentioned in a blog post that's up now on wbur.org/Boston, how even in Germany, the urinals had little soccer nets in them. I mean, that's like how crazy the world is for this. And it was a party. It was like the most fun I've ever had.
For the Germans, as the host country, what did it mean for them to be hosting the games?
It was a really interesting experience because they, for the first time, actually were able to sort of put their, you know, terrible history from the 20th century somewhat behind them and feel like, for the first time, they could display national pride, the patriotism that we take for granted in America that so many other countries feel. They just haven't been able to separate that from nationalism. So it was a great experience for them to be able to do that, to see the German flags everywhere. And the final match was in the Olympic Stadium where Jesse Owens, you know, famously ran. So it was just fraught with symbolism, and it was perhaps the greater trophy for Germany. They didn't win the cup, but they actually left with a better piece of their own national identity.
It is interesting how history and culture come full circle with soccer, because a similar thing happening in South Africa, where 20 years ago when Nelson Mandela was released from Robben Island prison, the first place he spoke was at Soccer City Stadium, and that's where South Africa opens against Mexico on Friday, mm-hmm, in the first game of the World Cup. So, Bill, just your takeaway here on the meaning of Africa, an African nation hosting this event.
It's fascinating that you bring up Nelson Mandela and Robben Island because, of course, there are people who contend convincingly that the soccer played on Robben Island during the 60s and into the 70s had something substantial to do with the different splinter groups that opposed apartheid realizing that they could work together. Huh. The most successful team in the association, in the Robben Island Soccer Association, was the team that brought players in from all the different groups. You didn't have to be in the ANC to play on their team. They welcomed anybody who could play soccer, and these guys realized they could work together effectively. And these were the guys who, when they got off Robben Island, formed the government that ended apartheid.
Okay. Last question to both of you, since as far as I understand, neither of you are getting on an airplane to fly to Johannesburg.
Well, I'm feeling more and more like that would be a good idea as we speak.
So where are you going to be catching your games here?
I kind of can't decide for some of these big games like USA-England. I mean, the place to go might be the Phoenix Landing in Cambridge. That's one of the places where you may plausibly actually see a fist fight over soccer in the U.S.
And you certainly will hear all of the England fans chanting in magnificently creative ways. It's almost worth going just for that.
Or do I just want to be undistracted at home? It's tough.
And Bill?
I will be hosting an intimate gathering, and anybody can come who wants to shut up and watch the game.
That's Bill Littlefield, soccer purist and host of NPR's Only a Game. Thank you so much.
A pleasure, Megan.
And WBR's Kurt Nickisch, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, the excitement's obviously palpable in South Africa, but as we heard, it's no less intense right here in Boston.
The bulk of our paninis, I'm named after Italian soccer players. I mean, there's a Del Piero, there's a Matarazzi, and then you have a De Rossi, which he's playing this year.
That was Michael Spencer. He's the owner and manager of Café dello Sport in the North End. Even though Spencer's menu honors Italian players, he says there are no national boundaries when it comes to his customers and soccer. His restaurant airs 5,000 to 6,000 soccer games a year, But it's the World Cup that turns his spacious cafe into standing room only viewing and a super hot spot in town. Joining us now to preview other upcoming World Cup related events in Boston is Mary Tiseo. She's executive director of South Africa Partners, a Boston nonprofit, and also is the group that's organizing soccer events all around Boston under the banner of World Cup Boston 2010. Mary Tiseo, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
So let me just ask you, first of all, very briefly, you just got back from South Africa. What's the excitement like there, and how do you plan on bringing that here to Boston?
Yeah, I was there last week, and it is pretty intense already. The friendly games were going on, and people were just already soccer mad. I mean, there are banners everywhere. People are wearing their jerseys, flags. Tourists from all over the world are already congregating in South Africa. It's on every radio program, every television program. And it dominates every conversation.
Mm-hmm. And as Kurt was saying earlier, when Germany hosted the games, it was Germany's chance to say, this is who we are now. Are you getting that same feeling in South Africa?
Absolutely. I mean, this is South Africa's it's coming out party. It's a chance for South Africa to really help shape the narrative about their country. I mean, we internationally get some of the negative news. We get disease, we get famine, we get violence. But what we don't get are all the amazing advancements that are going on in South Africa in science and in the arts. And this is an opportunity for them to display that.
So for soccer fans here in the Boston area, what are the events? There's kind of several dozen that World Cup Boston is organizing. So give us a rundown of a couple of your favorites.
Sure. And it depends on your age and what you want, what you're interested in. On the 11th and 12th of June, over at the Boston Children's Museum, there's going to be an Africa celebration, which will be happening with activities for kids and for adults. On the 25th and 26th of June, there's going to be a mini World Cup. So kids from around the city and from the suburbs can congregate at Moakley Field, and we're going to have our own little mini World Cup. On the 12th for the USA England game, we're going to be at the House of Blues, so people can join us over there.
And so are the New England Revolution.
And
I hear.
every member of the New England Revolution is planning to be there. So it's going to be quite a day.
So a lot of not just sporting but also cultural events to sort of give people a chance to learn about South Africa and sport and soccer and World Cup in general. But let me ask you, what do you think makes Boston such a great soccer city?
Well, I think that, you know, this is a city where 25% or more than 25% of the city is foreign born. I mean, this is a city where people know soccer, they love soccer, they play soccer, they watch soccer. So we've found that there's actually a tremendous amount of enthusiasm for this.
Mm-hmm. And so tying that sort of already existing passion here for the game to something that's an international event.
Mm-hmm.
Is that helpful for Boston?
Absolutely.
That one of the goals of World Cup Boston?
Yes, it is. I mean, I think that we're very aware that Boston is an international city. And I think it's a chance for us to really connect to that, for people from different neighborhoods to come together to enjoy a cultural event or play together on a soccer field, and to really begin to have a sense of community, who we are as a people here in the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Mary Tiseo. She is the executive director of South Africa Partners, a Boston nonprofit. And South Africa Partners is also organizing World Cup Boston 2010 and dozens of events over the next month, all around Boston related to soccer and South African culture. Mary Tiseo, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. And people can go to the website if they want.
We've got a link to that on ours, Radio Boston, WBUR.org/Boston. And also, before I go, I should note that our fair city, Boston, is one of 17 American cities that are part of the U.S. bid to host the next World Cup, possibly in 2018 or 2022. So everybody could actually have a chance to see those games right here.